Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. What started out as a rainy Thursday has turned into a steamy Thursday afternoon. Sun shining, and it is rather steamy. Humidity is pretty high, but it's a nice-looking Thursday afternoon. We welcome you in to The Drive. Bill, Dan, our regular Thursday co-host is Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. He's here in the studio, and we have Drew at the controls. And once again, we'd love for you to join in. If you weren't with us yesterday, we are now able to take phone calls again. The Drive hotline, same number, 334-321-1390, and it's presented by Skybar. But again, if you haven't attempted to call in, it's going to be a little different than in the past. The calls are directly being being answered by the system, so it should just ring, and then you will hear a connection and a sort of a swoosh sound, the old sound that. I loved it. Some stations saved that sound to use when they were going to the phones, but it's the sound you used to have. Anytime you brought a phone call live on the air, it would be a shoo.
I think you just like saying swoosh and doing
the noise. No, I don't
because
really. I wish we had multiple times a segment. I know, but I wish we had the sound effect and we could just hit it. Is what I was saying. Then I'd say you could hear and we'd run the sound. But anyway, you won't hear Drew's voice or anyone screening the calls because we can't do that. But then just be patient, and we will see. Hopefully, we'll notice the blinking phone line, and we will get to it. So we'd love for you to join in here on the Thursday Drive.
That's right. No, we really appreciate the work Auburn Network folks have done in getting our phone line back. I mean, we went from not being on the air for a couple of days last week to being pretty much operational now, and we appreciate the hard work that's gone in because things were pretty bad Memorial Day weekend.
It's gone in stages. I mean, the first thing is the signal was able to get back on the air, but all it could be done was just run satellite program.
Yeah, at some point, we got sparks to stop shooting out of stuff here at the radio station.
But this board would not. I mean, you couldn't bring anything onto the air here locally. No microphones. Got the microphones back. We're able to play commercials through the system, but then we couldn't take calls, so we've now moved on to that. So, yeah, we'd love for you to join in. You can call us or you can text us.
That's right. You can text the show, 334-564-1840, the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors, and they also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
So come on in and join us here on this Thursday. There's plenty to talk about. We've got a little bit of news coming from multiple sports. Auburn picking up a football commitment. Yesterday, it was fun while we were here. Jason Caldwell got a heads-up phone call about a visitor and where he was going to be breakfasting this morning so that Auburn Undercover would have somebody there. And Christian Clemente did indeed talk to the prospect Donovan. Was it Donovan Scott?
Star.
Donovan Star. That's right. Donovan Star this morning, and then by this afternoon, he is a commit to Auburn for the class of 25.
That's right. We think Auburn wants to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 18 to 20.
Yeah, they'd like to be around 20 if possible.
20 high school students signed up when July turns to August. and they're getting closer to that number. Is this number 11?
This is 12.
This is 12 now that Auburn has signed up from the high school class of 25. So, yeah, big pickup for a group that doesn't want to be having to play catch up with its roster later on in this recruiting calendar. So it's a nice pickup. Top 300, 400 guy in the
ESPN. He's a 4-star.
Yeah, 4-star, top 50 corner nationally. Mm-hmm. It sounds like the kind of guy you want to add to a recruiting class that's going to try to compete with the best ones in the SEC this upcoming year.
Yeah, well, right now Auburn is one of, I believe, 6 SEC teams ranked in the top 10 in recruiting for next year. So I mean, that's where you've got to be.
Try to win a bunch of SEC games without recruiting in the top 10. It's a lot harder. I don't know how many top 10 classes Missouri had before this past year's success. I mean, I think maybe it's occurred before, but you know, Kentucky rarely recruits in the top 10. They've had 10 win seasons, but
yeah, I don't think Ole Miss has been recruiting in the top 10.
No,
the last few years.
Ole Miss hasn't. Ole Miss has done a really an impressive job in the transfer portal.
Yeah.
And Kentucky and Missouri have both been in the SEC East too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and so things.
Missouri has gotten some big name guys.
They have now. Obviously. There's no question. Yeah. Eli has brought some in here in the last 2 years now.
Yeah, Luther Burden obviously being the one that sticks out. But the one thing that always Missouri always seems to get really good defensive linemen. And if you go look at what they're ranked coming out of high school, they're usually pretty strong.
And there seem to be some pretty good defensive linemen from the mid, the Midwest or closer to the campus of Missouri than there are some other players. Luther Burden, of course, is a homegrown product,
St. Louis kid. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's like Dan said, it's hard. You know, I don't think you can do it consistently.
Right.
And I go back to something, you know, that was said when Auburn hired Brian Harsin, is that, you know, fired Gus Malzahn, hired Brian Harsin. One of the big things was they wanted to be a consistent contender. It wasn't that, you know, Auburn couldn't contend under Gus Malzahn. They did a couple times, but they wanted to get to that point, and obviously it didn't work out under Harsin. But you need to be able to be consistent. And if you look at the teams that are consistently near the top of the SEC year in and year out, they're recruiting at a high level. That is
every year.
Square one.
Right.
Talent acquisition doesn't guarantee you anything, right? Texas A&M is a perfect example of that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have it, I mean, it's hard to survive long term. You may have a year or two where you do well, or you know, you have you take advantage of maybe your schedule not being as tough, like a Missouri, like a Kentucky. But I think now with Texas and Oklahoma coming into the league and the end of divisions, this is going to be a situation where if you don't recruit in the top half of the SEC, and usually that's going to mean if you don't recruit in the top 10 in the country, it's going to be hard for you to last, you know, long term.
You can look at if 5 SEC teams finish in the top 10 in recruiting, you can look at the one that doesn't win 10 games and say, oh, see? Yeah, you know, but it also means that the other 4 probably did win 10 games, which is
square one. I mean, you the blue chip ratio exists for a reason, and for people who don't know that, it's basically if you sign more than half of your classes over the last 4 years, if more than half of your classes are made up of 4-star and 5-star guys compared to 3-stars and below, you have the talent in place, the baseline, to compete for a championship. And in the SEC, there's usually 6, 7, 8 teams that are in that mix, so you have to do that. There has never been – in the championship game era, there has never been a team to win the national championship without hitting that. Auburn in 2010 is the closest thing we've ever come to it. Oregon, you know, obviously made it in the national title game.
People forget how solidly – I mean, I know that it didn't necessarily translate to the NFL draft, but people forget how solidly – like, there were a couple of good Tuberville classes before the 2010 season, and Chizik had recruited well in two cycles.
They're the closest to being under the ratio, and what do you do when you're under the ratio? You have
the best player in the country.
Yeah, you have the best quarterback that you've ever had.
Yeah.
And a top 5 pick on the defensive line. You know, also
yeah, absolutely. You, absolutely.
Fairly as well.
But when you have decent talent around the best player and maybe the best offensive and defensive players in the country, that goes a long way.
Missouri's schedule to me is really interesting because you look and it seems like with 8 SEC games this year, they've got 4 relative layups. in even without the SEC East existing, in Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, Arkansas, and South Carolina on the schedule. The other four games decide if Missouri goes to the playoff or not. And that's part of the reason why Missouri, I believe right now, Missouri has better odds to win the SEC than Alabama does.
Yeah.
Because Missouri has four games.
Because of who they play?
Because Missouri has, I mean, because you have to get to the SEC championship game.
Right.
If I remember correctly, Missouri doesn't play Georgia.
Missouri's four non-layups, I would say, in conference play. All due respect to, you know, South Carolina, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, and Arkansas.
I wouldn't be surprised if they lost one of those, but you know.
But if they go 4-0 in those games, then you're talking about home games against Auburn and Oklahoma, and road games against Texas A&M and Alabama. And those four games decide.
Those are all winnable if you're a really good Missouri team.
The road game against Alabama is the toughest.
Sure. But it's like one of those things like we are not 100% sure what to expect. Like if there was a year to beat Alabama and Tuscaloosa, this is it.
Yeah, right? but we're going to compare rosters and talent on the rosters. Alabama would have to, what
Missouri would have to do is kind of like a Hugh Freeze at Ole Miss scenario where you catch them. You know, you've got the offense, you've got the receiver play, you've got what it takes to win on the road, and this might not be the best Alabama team we've seen in a while, you know. So I think that's
no, kind of it shouldn't
there.
Be. It's game no. eight,
but heck, you know, 10-2. If they go, I don't know what is their non-conference schedule. Like?
It's Boston College and UMass. Remember we talked about
the
They go to Amherst and play that game. Boston College is their non SEC Power Five opponant. Like it's a manageable.
Layup. Yep. Yeah. I mean, they have a great schedule.
10-2. If they split those games we talked about.
Yes.
And they go 10-2, that's a playoff team.
And so, I mean, so it comes down to can you win 2 of 4 against Auburn, Alabama, A&M, and Oklahoma? And look, if Missouri isn't as good as people think, they could go 0-4 in those games and they could lose one of the four supposed layups, you know, in Starkville or in Fayetteville.
That seems like rock bottom for them. Like that is the floor of the floor for them.
You would sure
I think a 7-5 season would be tremendously disappointing looking at what's in front of them right now and looking at what they bring back from last year and so you know, so that's part of the reason why.
They've got an Ole Miss kind of vibe to them for me where it's like I see it, I need to see them beat somebody really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to see them do it maybe more than once before I'm like all on board. And that's my thing with Ole Miss. Really good football team and a really good football team who can't beat the elites but takes care of business everywhere else can still win 10 games, could still get you in the mix to be a playoff team in this day and age of college football now, especially with the expanded playoff. So, Missouri's in a good spot. I know Ole Miss is in a really good spot. It's going to be funny, though, because like one of those teams – you think about like that second tier in the SEC this year, and I lump like a Tennessee in there. I lump a LSU in there with them.
Is Bama?
It's
weird. I'd still have Bama
in the upper tier.
That's right. Yeah,
I would say your upper tier: Georgia, Texas, and Bama is probably where I'm like, you know, if the SEC championship game at the end of the year was some combination of like two of those three teams, that would be what I would bet on. But that next tier where it's like, if things break right, you could get to Atlanta. That Ole Miss, Tennessee, LSU is always, I think, in that range. I don't know if A&M's quite there this year. But, like, of those teams, just, like, one of them's going to fall below expectations just because it has to happen.
I don't want to exclude Bama from my top tier, but I would say I would project right now, I would think it's – maybe Georgia, Texas.
Yeah,
because they're gonna
Texas, Bama,
and
Texas's schedule is more favorable than Alabama.
I think Georgia and Texas may be in a separate tier from everyone else because they open the season as preseason top five teams, and I'm not sure anyone else in the SEC necessarily will. And then I would say
I don't know, Bama's probably gonna be preseason top 10.
Just behind those two, I would say LSU, Bama, Missouri, and Ole Miss are all.
Alabama's clear ahead of those.
Okay, you think yeah. Okay, because
yeah. I think so too.
And what's interesting is that all three of those teams, LSU, Missouri, and Ole Miss, right now have better odds to win the SEC than Alabama does.
I think that's more of a function of the schedule, though.
It could very well be, but that's where I would say like it's jarring to see when I was in Vegas last week, jarring to see Bama with the sixth best odds on the board to win the conference.
Yeah.
And yes, part of that is you have to get to the conference title game. To win the conference, Bama could be a.
That's the thing, though. It feels like it feels like for Alabama to be a team that contends for the SEC this year, it's like no one should be surprised by it. Like they get to the end of the year and it's like, oh, Bama won 10 or 11 games. They're like, yeah. I mean, they're still really, really good, really talented. It would feel like overachieving for Ole Miss or Missouri or LSU in the state they're in right now to get to Atlanta. And that's why I think they're kind of
– yeah.
They're closer to Georgia and Texas. But you're right, Dan. I think Georgia and Texas are ahead of them.
Another team I know –
Tennessee, I think, would be
– Well, no. I feel like I am completely out there away from everybody else.
Oklahoma?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
I don't think there's any respect.
Yeah.
No, I don't I hear agree. Anybody respecting Oklahoma.
I would put
– A team that won – I think people – I talked to three or four people. As a matter of fact, talked to one today and said, well, they had a losing season last year. They won 10 games last year.
2 years
they
ago.
Beat Texas last year. Yeah. I mean, they were 10-2
last year.
You know
what? I would put Oklahoma yeah, probably above Missouri and Ole Miss. But for
I'd
me –
I definitely put them in there. When you're talking that next level,
I know
I'd put Oklahoma
somebody.
In there.
Yeah. And Oklahoma and Tennessee, I think, are both kind of in that boat where it's like – They've got this.
Let's
got,
see it again.
Yeah. How about 40-1 right now to win the SEC for the Oklahoma Sooners in their first year?
That's crazy.
I wouldn't take that it. I wouldn't take it. But if you're going to throw
you're an
something,
Oklahoma fan, you'd be
yeah. If you're going to throw couple of bucks something on at that. Yeah,
ESPN bet odds right now for the SEC. Georgia is
$5 gets me $200.
Yeah.
Plus, yeah. So Georgia
just throw that
50.
Georgia's at +175 to win the conference right now. Which is almost 2-1.
Yep.
1.7-1. Texas is at +300, 3-1. Ole Miss is next, 6-1. Bama then has moved up.
That is a donation right there.
Yeah, Bama has moved up to 7.5-1 on ESPN bet. There are other places.
That's fourth.
Other places where the odds are longer, but on ESPN they're next. Then LSU at 8.5. Then Tennessee at 11-1. Then Missouri at 13-1. Now we get into more long shot territory. A&M 20-1, Oklahoma 40-1.
The problem is
Oklahoma's schedule is awful. I mean, Oklahoma and Texas are coming into the league. It's welcome Texas and Oklahoma.
An Oklahoma team that can get to the SEC championship game with this schedule can be competitive enough to win it all.
You're not kidding.
Like if they're one of the top two teams in the league at the end of the regular season, Oklahoma.
Their first two SEC games are home against Tennessee and at Auburn.
At Auburn, yeah.
Good luck.
Oklahoma 40-1 to win the conference. Auburn
also got a pretty good conference.
Auburn 50-1. Kentucky 75. And then you get into the triple digits: South Carolina, Florida, Arkansas, Mississippi State, and Vanderbilt.
That's sort of the way I feel about where those 100, teams are.
100-1, 100-1
right
or longer. Florida a little bit jarring to see it 100-1 to win.
It really is. It really is. But I mean, again, they're looking for their.
But that sounds about right.
Yeah, it does. It does with the problems they've had, the players they've lost. I mean, we will see.
They've got.
Yes, you're right.
No, you know what? No, Oklahoma would be the team though to say like that's the, you know the talent and the recent results don't necessarily match up with.
No, they had a nightmare season year before last.
People are sure Missouri is better than Oklahoma.
Yes, I'm not.
I think that is a situational thing. I think you know. Whereas you see four layups on Missouri's schedule, you may have one or two on Oklahoma's.
Right.
I think
you just line those teams up. Let's go through the summer and just line them up on a neutral site to open the season.
If it's based on the schedule, then we'll see what happens when Missouri's playing non-layups, right? If it's based on the
– I just pulled up Florida's schedule again.
NC-17.
How do they get 500?
Here's the thing about Florida. There is a realistic There's a realistic scenario where they go 3-9.
Yeah.
Realistic.
I'm not even looking at it and go 5-7 is what I think makes sense. Maybe 6-6.
One of the three in the 3-9 would be Samford, too, right? Which is a
non-bowl
subdivision.
Yeah, when you got like, Florida State and Miami as other non-conference.
I would like them against Kentucky at home, maybe, if they still got a pulse at that point. At Mississippi State, maybe.
Yeah.
You know? But, yeah, like, okay, they beat Samford. Give me two wins. Give me two wins on top of that, all right? Miami, A&M, at Mississippi State, UCF, at Tennessee, Kentucky, Georgia, at Texas, LSU, Ole Miss, at Florida State. Mississippi State on the road is probably the most
Mississippi
favorable
State
one.
Is the most they, winnable game. They could,
and then maybe Kentucky at home, and then it's like, okay.
They could start 5-0. I mean Miami and A&M.
Dog, they ain't beating Miami.
Miami and A&M I think will both be games where probably at kickoff I would think it's a touchdown or less. I think those are both probably coin flip.
I don't know.
Coin flip adjacent games. Miami's in Gainesville. I mean those I think Miami and A&M are both in Gainesville. So it's like I think there's a chance of that. Now if they aren't 5-0, then you get into the Tennessee, Kentucky, Georgia, Texas, LSU, Ole Miss, Florida State.
Yeah, Miami's a 3-point favorite in that game right now.
And I'm sure A&M would be a slight favorite in Gainesville too. But if they're not 5-0, then when you get into the second the final seven games of the schedule, then you run the risk of just
we talked about it recently. You talk about being 5-0. If they lose at home to UCF off of an off week, they'll launch that dude into space.
Yeah, coaching change. You're right.
Hugh Freeze isn't in danger of losing his job in this situation, but I think it's a similar deal where if Oklahoma isn't Auburn's first loss, you look at the first four games of the year. If Oklahoma isn't Auburn's first loss of the year, if Oklahoma were to come to Auburn and hand Auburn its second or third loss of the year, the rest of that schedule does not set up.
It would look a lot like Florida last year.
Exactly. Like that's where I keep saying like Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Cal are imperative to not slip up because if you're a 3-2 team that just lost to Arkansas and Oklahoma, now you're going to Athens. Like it's a rough second half of the season there too, and I think it's a similar deal with the first five for Florida versus the rest of the season.
And I personally think you're more likely to lose to Cal than you are to Arkansas.
Probably,
but that's just me.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah,
Though Arkansas should be motivated.
Well, we talked about it not too long ago on our podcast, and like the Cal game to me seems like a how much better are you game. It's early, you know, and if you squeak by Cal, you know, it's not the end of the world, but like. If you go out there and handle Cal at home, you're like, okay, this team looks like it should be better than the one you had last year. Then you get Arkansas, and then you're like, okay, or you know, you get Arkansas in a couple weeks. Then you're 4-0 going at Oklahoma and saying, all right, let's see what you got. If you lose to Cal or you squeak by Cal, you're in that situation where you're like, man, how much better are you? Mm-hmm. How much better are you, especially with Arkansas? Like, I would imagine Arkansas, especially early in the season, is going to put up more fight than they did because I mean they flat
can't put up less.
You're right about that. Fayetteville.
All right, we need to get to our first break. Love for you to join in again. Give us a call on the Drive Hotline 334-321-1390 as we are just underway here on the Thursday Drive.
What's it mean to be a Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, Drew at the controls, and you know, I guess word got back to ESPN yesterday because we spent a good deal of time yesterday wondering what's going on with the other bowl games because we tried, Justin, we started looking to see, you know, what's going on because of the schedule that was released yesterday with the college football playoff for the dates and the sites and the dates and the time in between. They were leaving the Saturday before New Year's open with bowl games. We're just wondering when are those games because my thought yesterday was the games that are traditionally on New Year's Day other than the six big bowls,
mm-hmm.
you know, the Outback, the Citrus, the Gator, those bowls, I was wondering where they're going to be. Well, today ESPN releasing the bowls and – what a list it is, Dan. I mean, this is sheerly for inventory and gambling. I mean, that's the only reason I see as we have more bowls than ever.
More bowls than ever, over 80 slots for Division I bowl subdivision teams. I think about 62-64% of the bowl subdivision will be represented in bowl season this year.
64% of them going to have winning records? No.
I don't know if that's true. Bill, you were wondering about December 28th?
Yep. December 28th, a pretty busy day.
8 bowl games scheduled for Saturday, December 28th, the final Saturday of 2024. They're not playing playoff games on Saturday, December 28th. They made the decision to stick with New Year's Eve and New Year's Day midweek. So that left a Saturday where there were no NFL games scheduled, and the bowl calendar has scheduled 8 bowl games for that Saturday, December
28th. NFL's not doing
28th.
Well on that Saturday?
No, no NFL on the 28th.
I would probably capitalize on
there
that.
There are 2 NFL games scheduled for December 21st, which mm-hmm. is that are going to go.
There are three playoff games. That's yes. the
two NFL the games that are going to go games. Scheduled to go head to head with the 2 college football playoff games that are scheduled for TNT. There's a third game that night.
There are 3 playoff games on the same day that there are 2 NFL games.
Yes, they're the first round of the playoffs.
That's great.
Is scheduled on Saturday the 21st. That's maybe the reason ESPN sold those 2 playoff games to TNT is because those two games are going to be up against Kansas City, Houston, and Baltimore, Pittsburgh, going on at the same time on the NFL calendar. But five bowl games on New Year's Eve, including the Fiesta Bowl, which will be a college football playoff. Quarterfinal. The 3 college football playoff quarterfinals are the other 3 are scheduled for New Year's Day.
There's 3, and there are 4 other regular bowl games on New Year's Eve.
Why did they not do 2 and 2? I don't know.
Because I think the Peach Bowl, the Rose Bowl, and the Sugar Bowl. Well, for I think one of the reasons is because there are no games scheduled during those 3 games on New Year's Day. Mm. Like those 3 games are going to get.
Triple header.
Yeah, triple header with no other bowl games.
No other bowl scheduled. Games on New Year's, right. New Year's Eve has 4.
Well, what if you're the
4?
My mind just immediately goes to, you're the one team that had to play. You know, there's one team that's going to get an advantage of having an extra day. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Because coaches will always be talking about that.
Well, there's one, and it's the one that plays there on New Year's
Eve. Yeah, the four quarterfinals are going to be at home for the right. teams in the, you know, the 5, 6, 7, and 8 seeds in the college football playoff. The 4 first round games will be hosted by the 5, 6, 7, and 8 seeds. The quarterfinals and semifinals are locked into the New Year's 6 bowl games. This year, the Orange and the Cotton Bowl will be the semifinals.
That works out pretty nicely, though, because you get 4 quarterfinals and 2 semifinals. You can just rotate among the 6.
I do wonder.
That is a good.
Scott Bagwell raised the point today, which I think is an interesting one. The attendance for the Orange and Cotton Bowls will be interesting because that could be it's a second playoff game for teams that advanced into straight to the quarterfinals, third playoff game for teams that had to play their way into the quarterfinals. It's another trip to either Miami or Dallas if you're not terribly local. Like if you get 2 non-local teams in that bowl game, especially with a national championship a week later, could it be like a bridge too far to ask people to
travel? Yeah, for a midweek New Year's whatever game.
Yes, and that's the other thing is that you'll
on top of what you just said.
That's why these games should be at home.
Yeah, and the semi.
That's why this should be on campus.
It's easier to travel to games on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day as well. When you talk about the semifinals, you're talking about Thursday and Friday games.
But it may be easier, but you may not be able to have those extra days before or after that you'd normally like.
I mean, that's true.
If you're talking about a Wednesday game, all right, you may get New Year's Eve off, but then you'd have to take off the 29th and 30th to be able to get there. Yeah.
Unless
you're
right there.
And then
it's going to make it very difficult for season ticket holders.
And we all know the neutral site environments are always great.
Oh yeah.
If we're doing this like the NFL, this is just becoming NFL junior. If this is semi-pro football or whatever you want, or professional football at some point,
keep them at home.
Make being a higher seed mean something. Because here's the problem I have with this whole system.
The only problem is the bowl games are
no the
never
bowl games are never
going
to do that. Right. Here's the problem I have with this whole system. Is that you mean to tell me that 1, 2, 3, and 4 get a bye, but they don't get a home playoff game, but 5, 6, 7, and 8 do? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, yes, there is an advantage, but I mean, like, I guess tactically, but like, man, can you imagine?
How much of an advantage is it sometimes to get that much time off?
Correct. Rest
while
stress.
Another
yeah.
team's playing yeah. at home.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, you know, that's why I'm not crazy about this whole system unless we're
imagine.
Just like opening.
You know
up.
What? We've flipped here on the show, Justin, because I think for a while we were keep the playoff exclusive, and since that war is over and we lost, you know what? 32. I'm in. Like, you know, at this point, like, you know, get rid of the other bowl games.
They were, yes. They
and
were,
give, me,
John
give
Cohen,
me
John Cohen said the same
give,
thing.
Give me 24 so. Or 32 in the and play them all at home except for the championship.
You go to 16 or 32. I don't like the buys.
20, I don't either. So I'd be 16 or 32.
24 is yeah. what
do like the FCS does.
24 is exactly what the FCS does.
Okay, so they have buys. Okay.
24 lets the top eight. Get a bye and then play
like
16
that.
To
top
get
top eight are usually more realistic than anybody. If you do that though, you don't need to be spacing it out these 10, 11
first,
days.
Yeah, so at that point,
you need to just do it every weekend.
Crown a champion
top
on New
eight,
Year's.
Get a bye, middle eight, get a home game, bottom eight, you're just happy to be there.
Yeah,
like, you know, you fought your way in. Good job.
National championship game on New Year's Day. Like play this thing in December.
Wow, if your national championship game's on New Year's Day. You're going to start the season early.
So this is how we're fixing
regular season.
This
game.
Is how we're fixing that. This is how we're fixing that. We are dropping a regular season game.
Okay.
Because here's the thing. I've thought this for a long time.
Do you hate the idea of a national championship crowned on New Year's Day, Bill, or do you think?
No, I think that'd be great. And you know, back in the day of 10 game regular season schedules,
I like 11 or 10, but I like 11. And why I like 11 is if we're still doing bowls or whatever or anything, I just like I hate the idea that you can go to a ball game and finish with a losing season, which obviously Auburn has done now twice in the last 3 years. Like 6-6, middle of the road. Like I've always liked.
Well, if you go 11 and you go to a bowl, you have to have a winning record. Go to the bowl game. You're not going to finish the season with a losing record.
Correct. So I like that.
I do too.
That was like I know. Growing up, that was what it was like. You had 11 games.
Right.
Right. And so do that. Drop one of these paycheck games, and you know if you're in the SEC, just be like, hey, we're going to a 9-team schedule. Everybody plays a big name opponent. Everybody plays a power conference opponent, and your 11th game's free.
You want to play one mandatory Power 5 team.
You
want to
play a paycheck
you
game?
Do.
You know, yeah. Hey, Georgia, you can play Georgia Tech.
Right.
South Carolina, play Clemson.
Florida,
all that.
If you want to play Florida State and Miami, you can do it.
Yeah, and I like that. I mean, if we're not going with radical change. Which, you know, I've had you talk, Dan, or y'all talk about the 32 team playoff, you know. I will continue to trumpet my Champions League idea where we're fixing all of college football at that point. But you get to a point where you have, you know,
once you break off football from the other conferences, the relegation.
You can do whatever you want.
Become,
yeah,
yeah. I mean,
you can do whatever you want.
I think it's you know, the question of how big is the tent. Going to be for those sorts of things, but I think a 32.
My Champions League idea, and you can read it. It's online somewhere. My Champions League idea is basically like we go back to 10 team conferences, and everybody plays everybody round robin, and no conference championship games. Whoever's on top is on the top, and then it feeds
well,
into
a conference championship game. It's a moneymaker, but it's really unnecessary when you're talking about expanding playoffs.
Yep. And you could, and you, you know, so many teams in each conference feed into a pool. There's a round robin from there, and then that feeds into a knockout stage. And by the way, and it was just when I did it, it was purely just a copycat of what they do in soccer. But by the end, you have clear cut conference champions. You have a giant playoff. You basically have a playoff of 32 teams by the end of it. And then that whittles down to 16, 8, 4, 2, 1 champion. And the two teams that play in the national championship game will have played a maximum of 16 games, which is currently
I liked right you now. Know I liked your idea more when there was more continuity from season to season in college football. Now that it feels like we're reshuffle after every year, it's like you could have Coastal could have an amazing season and work their way up, and then one year and they're gone.
My idea for the Champions League thing could have promotion and relegation in it. I'm not as married to that as other people are because I think it's just hard to do. But yeah, and then you can have little ways of kind of qualifying. But I do like the idea though, smaller regular seasons, round robins, You know, smaller conferences.
Hey, postseason's where the eyes are, where the money is anyway. So I mean,
because what does a conference championship game give these conferences other than money? And I know money's important, but
you're right.
We've seen it hurt teams more than it helped teams when it comes to getting them in the playoff field. Just look at the Big 12.
Yep. All right, we need to get to our we're way behind. Get to our bottom of the hour break. Hey, you can join in as well. 334-321-1390 here on the Thursday Drive.
Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Ferg, talk a little bit about the Observer. What all's been going on lately and coming up?
Yeah, no, we're gonna have some fun tomorrow. If you're an Observer subscriber, I got a mailbag, and this mailbag was very heavy on a question I asked people to send me answers to. I answered some questions, but I did I asked a question. It's a very common question I get in the mailbag a lot, and I just wanted to hear other people's takes on it. I wanted to know from Auburn fans. If you could schedule a home-and-home series for Auburn in football or basketball anywhere, where are you going and why? And so we got some really, really cool answers in there. We're going to talk a lot about that. A lot of good stuff in the mailbag. And then tomorrow, our podcast episode is going to be a lot of fun because we're going to do something completely different. I'm putting Dan to the test tonight.
I didn't know about this.
Good.
Oh, did.
Oh, I did? Okay. Oh.
Yeah, the text.
I don't read the text messages.
Yes, you do. You reacted to it.
No, I like this idea.
Yeah. So we were talking, hey, it's this time of year. There's not a whole lot of like Auburn specific stuff to talk about, but we're gonna do a head to head Auburn football trivia challenge. It's gonna be Dan's going up. Dan's already intimidating his opponent right now.
Yeah. No, I'm texting. I'm gonna have Bill.
Fiji answers.
Yeah, yep. Secretly wired in.
We got Marshall. That. And then
what are you doing? Come on.
Auburn football trivia.
Oh, okay.
So it's an Auburn football trivia challenge on the Observer podcast tonight. We're taping it tonight. Me and Pablo.
Yep. Going head to head. Painter's gonna be our host with his radio voice. It's gonna be great. But then also this week at the Observer, I started a series. We're doing kind of season preview stuff. I'm doing position by position, looking at kind of the past, present, and the future, just to look ahead at each position group for Auburn. Kind of going in depth there. This week I did quarterback and wide receiver together. Quarterback came out on Wednesday. Wide receiver came out today. And then earlier this week did a story breaking down the numbers behind Auburn's reload in basketball in the backcourt and why it was such a big thing. Here's a fun stat, maybe not as fun. Auburn had the second highest scoring season in program history this past year. Fourth. They were the fourth highest scoring team in the SEC. They were 13 out of 14 teams in the SEC this year in backcourt scoring. In points per game for their guards.
As many points as they scored, they were that far down in backcourt scoring.
The only team behind them was South Carolina, who played a very slow brand of basketball. Yeah, and had a huge
game. If they scored 70 points, that was an explosion for them.
And so talking about how Auburn, one of the big things when you look at years past for Bruce Pearl and kind of where the SEC is heading, getting more firepower in the backcourt, Bruce said it, couple weeks ago to us, we got to get better in the backcourt. Mm-hmm. And so, the news yesterday, Miles Kelly officially signed with Auburn. He arrived today. I saw pictures of him getting to campus.
Right.
I know Auburn fans continue to have PTSD every time like a guy commits and they're like, where's the signing?
I mean, really? It was like, when is he signing? Has he signed yet?
I got a ton of people asking about it.
Yeah, no kidding.
I had not heard anything that was off the table.
Nor had I.
So, but Miles Kelly there and just kind of what he brings to the table with that for Auburn. You can check all that out, auburnobserver.com, $60 a month or $60 a year. Got a lot of stuff. Again, this week, four newsletters, a couple podcasts. We'll have fun with the trivia game tonight. I think the trivia thing is interesting because I do a lot of stuff where I have to go back and look at like old media guides and kind of flip through. And I've picked up some stuff in the past that, this is interesting. So I wrote some questions based around that. And I hope it's not too hard. I think Dan and Pablo will be in a good spot. I believe. And you know, Dan, you're a trivia guy.
Well, there are periods of Auburn history that I feel like I know really well, and then there are periods where either because I was a kid or because I
ancient history,
there's some way back ones. Yeah. There's a couple of them, but it's mostly kind of in our wheelhouse of Auburn.
Pablo probably would certainly have me on not even ancient history, but the history that maybe as a kid he was more versed in. Because
I want to do, if this goes well, I want to do a basketball one of these at some point in the off season, because he would be
yeah, he knows his stuff.
Yeah, he would be all world on that.
I want to see what you came up with. I think it's gonna be a fun episode.
Yeah, it should be fun. So you can check that out. Observer subscribers get that tomorrow morning along with the mailbag. So yeah, auburnobserver.com.
All right. Again, love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about? Let's see. What about Dan Hurley? I wanted to sort of wait. And
you want to go second hour with Dan Hurley? I mean,
I want to for sure have a full segment. Mm-hmm. Don't want to just get into that.
It's and huge. Then, I mean, I am stunned by. I mean,
the early morning news. All right. So I spend some time with Ben on Thursday mornings. I mean, that's really the only reason post retirement that I ever intentionally am up before 8 o'clock. So I was on with Ben, and I had of course checked to see what the headlines were, and like, oh yeah, that's pretty big.
One of my brothers lives overseas, and so I sometimes wake up to text from him that he sends me at like 4 o'clock in the morning Central mm-hmm. time of stuff he's seeing, because it's the middle of the day over there. And so this morning I woke up to him breaking the news to me that Dan Hurley was considering the Lakers job.
Well, I mean, UConn folks are more than a little concerned. I don't think this is just and they're going to check it out. I mean, they're going to do everything they can to get Hurley. And I think a lot of UConn folks feel like this is something that he could be interested in. Kentucky wasn't, he wasn't interested
it was
in,
tough to, it
in,
was tough
in
to
going look. To another college job.
But another, but an NBA job and one of, and probably the NBA job. You know, I guess the only bigger one right now would be the Celtics for him, obviously mm-hmm. being in that area, and obviously the Celtics are not moving on from their head coach.
No, they're okay.
So, yeah. I guess maybe the Knicks. He's a New York guy, but like the Knicks are fine right now.
I mean, I think succeeding Popovich would be a really sweet job for somebody in the NBA, but it's not the same sort of deal.
It ain't LA.
It ain't the chance to coach LeBron.
No. This is a different sort of thing entirely. And Dan Hurley, I mean, there had been reports that the Lakers had been very interested in J.J. Redick. That had been out.
It's so funny that they could either be J.J. Redick or Dan. So you can get a guy who's never coached or the best coach in college basketball.
That's right. Coach who was just, I mean, over the last two seasons, two dominant championships.
And I hate the way this goes nowadays, because, I mean, you can always find a dumb opinion on the internet. But there were a few I saw today where people were like, man, if Dan Hurley goes to the Lakers, that's tough for college sports. And it's like, dog, it's the Lakers. Like, and it's like, well, it's this NIL and this transfer portal stuff scaring all these coaches away. And it's like, okay, always happens.
That is a factor. I mean, that could be a factor, but you're right.
But it's like, man, this is tough. This is shows you the state of college sports. I'm like, wait, what was the state of college sports when Jimmy Johnson left Miami for the Cowboys? You know,
but that's,
Spurrier left Florida for Washington.
When Beilein left Michigan to be the coach of the Cavs like a couple of years ago. Billy Donovan. Like, I mean, there's a
couple. At the top of his game, man. Like, you know, going to be like Jim Harbaugh, because that was the whole point there.
Right.
It was like, oh, Jim Harbaugh just won a national championship. Dude was trying to get to the NFL for years, and on top of that, he probably had the NCAA staring him down, and like so. Oh, I'll have a go. Like, and I know Lord knows the Chargers aren't the Lakers by any stretch, but like, I get to go to LA and coach one of the most gifted quarterbacks in all of the NFL and Justin Herbert, and I don't have to worry about the NCAA breathing down my neck. And I brought a national championship to my alma mater mm-hmm. that I have hit the ceiling. Like, you know, the mountaintop's here. Let's go. And if you're Dan Hurley,
won. Yeah, you have dominated winning the last two national titles.
Yeah,
and like, you still have Anthony Davis, which I think is a key thing for this Lakers team. It's like, yes, it's LeBron for probably one more year, but it's also Anthony Davis, who could be the best or the second best player on a very good team.
Sure,
that, that you can build on, you know, and
it's the Lakers who, you know,
it's the Lakers.
It won't be impossible for them to get players.
Yeah, and it's like even when they're not good, they're the Lakers. Like, you know, like they get a ton of attention. You know, it's a high profile job. But yeah, it does sound like. It does really sound like he's taking it very seriously, and he should.
Mm-hmm.
I do love the conspiracy theory that this is all Coach K's fault. I don't know if y'all seen that.
Because they didn't get him 20 years ago?
Well, Coach K's an advisor to the Lakers in this, you know, process.
And maybe he's telling them what they should have done to get him 20 years ago.
Yeah, Hurley, you know, Hurley's trying to catch up with K, right.
and
I'm still here.
Multiple flies with one swat. Why not? All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive. Yeah, and then
what's it mean to be a Four Seasons
capital of Alabama? This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in, hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on what's turned out to be a very nice looking afternoon. It's a little humid, but that'll happen. That'll happen a lot. Summer's here in this part of the country. But we had a lot of rain this morning, and then it cleared up. It's really turned out to be a nice looking afternoon. I hope everybody doing well here on this Thursday as we get ready for the second hour of the show, which is brought to you as usual by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And love being able to tell you that you can join us, and we love for you to, on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, that number 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform or use the podcast center at ESPNAU.com. Big shout out to everybody at Southeastern Industrial Contractors, helping keep the show on the air.
And they also sponsor our podcasts. If you miss any of the show podcasts, know we had a little problem there when we were getting everything put back together after the storm from a week and a half ago. But podcasts also presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. In hour number one, we talked about Auburn football picking up a commitment, college football, the playoff schedules, how maybe things could be streamlined a little bit. Talked briefly about the bowl schedule being released today. And I could not tell you where a lot of the bowls are by their sponsors these days. I mean, that's good for the bowls. They need the sponsors. There are some wild ones.
But even
as I was looking at them,
and Justin, you went to the bowl game this past year. I did not make that trip. I've heard from multiple.
Good for you, Dan. I made the trip too.
And even I mean, look, when you've lost Jason Caldwell on this one, then it's real trouble.
Yeah, no kidding.
We were talking about earlier in the week. We were talking about the extra days of practice that coaches used to cherish for bowl games, and a lot of that was because of the work it would do for next year's team. But in an environment in college football
where
everything's year to year, and you could be going into a situation where, I mean, you might not have a roster that's in a position where it should play, right? Like you could have position groups where you've lost virtually or actually everybody, and you're going to try to figure out, you know, what to do with the bare bones. Auburn went to the bowl game with what, three scholarship receivers available on the roster? Four?
Yeah, I think three.
I think we're actually on the roster and available for the bowl game. I mean, it's just you wonder how helpful it truly is for next year. And if it's not about next year, if it's about this year.
Well, I mean, the problem with some of it for next year is you had some players that were going to be early enrollees that were practicing, but they can't play.
They can't play.
So, I mean, yes, how comforting is that to fans who are asked to shell out a couple of $100 for a bowl ticket and then pay for the trip and lodging and whatever there to go, hey, but we had good practice for next year.
It was losing
when you
its
go
luster,
up and you lose.
It was losing its luster before the playoff expanded. And
oh,
now
yes.
With the playoff expansion to 12, I just can't imagine how.
You know how we're fixing it, right?
I mean,
adding more bowls.
No. If we're talking radical change here, you know how we're fixing this, right? We're moving the bowl games to week one of the next season. That's
sure.
How, yep. That's how we're going to do it.
Or the bowl game.
I want people to actually play in the game.
I don't think ESPN's concerned about the inventory at that time of year.
Sure.
Yeah, it's. I mean, if the bowl game.
You make them in August, maybe.
Well, honestly, the hope would be that if you expand the playoff enough, you could provide games on the days to, like, those could replace the current bowl games. I know you're not, you know, I mean, if you get to 24, 32, maybe those games could exist.
Yeah, maybe your last game of the regular season is the Pop-Tarts Bowl. I don't know.
It's not going to.
Kids are already not playing in these games. Fans don't really care about them. And if the bigger the playoff gets, the less that they matter.
Absolutely. I mean, adding more bowl games this year when you've expanded the playoff from 4 to 12, I mean, I said it, it's for, you know, ESPN to have inventory and for folks to bet on. Other than that, I mean, I still doubt that the majority of everybody's fan bases are paying a whole lot of attention to these games.
You know what? These tickets should be free for these things. Like these things. These tickets should be free.
You get to like the bowl game in Montgomery, the Camellia Bowl, and it's played in a random weeknight in December. So ESPN will have something they can put on there in the minimum, and it'll be against two teams sometimes that are happy to be in a bowl game. We had a winning season. We're heading in the right direction. It's awesome. And you look up, and there are 200 people in the stands. And it's like, okay, cool. But again, there's a whole lot of that where it's like TV and all that. But it's changed. It's changed college football from day one, you know, or at least day one from when they started putting games on TV. I mean,
Bowl, by the way, is on day one of bowl season, December 14th.
Yeah.
That's one of the
at
same
9 o'clock Eastern time.
That's one of the same bowls as
eight local kickoff.
Eight local kickoff because in Montgomery.
For
on
a game
December
between
14th.
Like Kent State and
Sunbelt.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Sunbelt.
Coastal.
Southern Miss, God willing, we're going to get the Golden Eagles back into the bowl into a bowl game.
Watch out for them this year. No, but if lack of participation is an issue, then you know I'm not opposed to kids getting paid to actually play in the bowl game. You know, give them a bonus on top of everything they get. You know,
and make the sponsor pay for it. Make ESPN pay for it.
Exactly. But, you know, outsource this to the folks who want this to be on television and the folks who want this to be, you know, to be product. But no, I think as a live event, like it's astonishing how it's lost so much. And I think some of that is. I think some of that is when you expand the playoff, it feels even when you expand the playoff and open the door for every starter to leave and explore their option in free agency, it really makes the exercise more pointless than before.
I just think bowls at the start of the year and you just, I mean, you line up as
there'd
many
be a lot
big
more
men,
interest.
Yeah, and you no line up as many big like use it as like a curtain raiser for the season. Like use it as a blow them out. Hey,
that's what I thought we were doing.
It seems like the sponsors would like that better.
That's what I thought we were doing with the kickoff classics and such. Classics? I mean, so many of those neutral site games had a corporate sponsor attached to them.
And again, I think if we move the bowls to that instead of just, hey, this is the random game in Houston this year or the random game in Atlanta or in Dallas, it would have some more juice behind it, right? You know, like if you were Auburn and say, you know, this year, instead of opening with Alabama A&M, Auburn is playing. Heck, I mean, what if they were playing Maryland and Nashville, you know, to start this year? And after the Iron Bowl and after all that, you could go recruiting. You could go, you know, full blast to, you know, roster management and get on and move on to what's next, because I think that that makes more sense in the way of, you know, the way that the sport is going, as opposed to, hey, we'll make you play in a game. Some kids will be in it. Some aren't. People aren't really.
The other thing that would be fun is that would also be a way of sort of mandating those Power Five games.
Oh yeah.
You know, and so instead of worrying about when is it going to be, here they're going to be. They're going to be at the beginning, and they're going to be the first game, and it's going to be the so-and-so bowl.
Yep.
I think that'd be fun. All right, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Let's get to it. And hi, who are we talking to?
Hey, this is Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy.
I tell you what, you want to make the bowl games a little more interesting? Do away with half of them.
We were talking about it earlier when it's like, hey, all you got to do is go 500 to make a bowl game, and sometimes
or
not
close
even
to it,
or just close to it. It loses a lot of the appeal of it.
There's too many. Like the kids don't care. Like there is nothing special about playing in the Citrus Bowl or whatever it's called now.
Especially, Jeremy, for a program accustomed to making the postseason.
Yeah, if you were hoping to try to make the multiple team playoff that we're now in, and you don't, who cares?
I imagine for a Kansas or a Vanderbilt or a perennial Power Five doormat, like a January bowl game is a huge accomplishment. But I think for a lot of teams that expect six wins or have come to expect six wins or more based on their programs.
Let's say Tennessee, LSU, Auburn. You know, you don't make the 12-team playoff, but hey, you can play against somebody else on some odd weeknight bowl game.
No, and it's
there's the program aspect of it, and then there's also like from an individual player level, these NFL teams have enough film and tape on you. Like, no, and same with college coaches. Like, they're not going to base whether or not they want you to transfer to their school based on how you play in the bowl game. It's not like it was 20 years ago when not every game was on TV, and you know you had to work hard to scratch up film on some guys. Like, that's just not the thing anymore.
No, you're right.
So, reviving the bowl games, and, you know, the bowl game's only going to be as good as the teams that are playing in it. You can move it to the beginning of the season, and, you know, if it's Tulane and Kansas State, who's watching?
I don't know.
No, I mean, it's a problem that I think we're going to get a bigger playoff out of it, and then once the playoff is expanded sufficiently, maybe the other bowl games will, or a lot of the bowl games will atrophy and
I don't know. I mean, I just can't imagine ESPN not wanting product every night during the holiday season.
Sure, and that's where, you know, I'm sure Tulane and Kansas State will probably draw better than whatever Baseball Tonight would have back, you know, and there's a reason that ESPN doesn't do baseball anymore.
If you're a Power Five program, and you don't make the playoff, like should you be playing in a bowl game this off season?
Well, I don't know. If you're a Power Five team that has been struggling for a year or two, and you get up to eight wins, maybe you want to play in a bowl game. You know, I mean,
if you're in the top 20, like, I mean, you're saying you wouldn't be, you know, that. You should essentially qualify for one of the 10 best games at the end of the year. That would be pretty.
You just
rare.
Don't need 35 of them.
Right. If you've got enough bowl games for your best 25 or 30 teams, which is what we used to do.
Right.
It draws more interest. But when you've got teams with losing records in what used to be fairly decent bowls, you know, the Liberty Bowl or the Independence Bowl, whatever. You know, like who's watching?
When you still get outside of the playoff games, you're dealing with the lack of participation from the players too. Yeah. Right. Like once you get outside the playoff games, you get into everyone who could consider the portal or the NFL draft could be skipping the game. And I don't know, outside of making these playoff games or attaching some sort of cash participation bonus, I don't know how you solve that.
The money is the at this point, the way we have decided we want to do college football, the money is the only thing that would make them stunt, that would make them think about it. And it's going to have to be a decent paycheck, guys. Like, you're not going to be able to say, hey, we'll give you $1,000 and pay for all your expenses. That's not going to do it.
You're not getting it for pizza coupons like you used to.
No. Look, these guys used to, you know, these bowl games, I'm sure they still do. They hand out, you know, these swag packages that are probably worth $2,000 now. And that's not enticing enough.
No.
Like, how much money would it take to make Joe Blow right guard decide to play if he's really looking to transfer or go somewhere else?
I don't have an answer for that. I don't know. I have no idea.
You're talking about trying to shell out $25,000 or $30,000 to a guy that nobody wants to watch play in the game anyway.
Or nobody cares if he plays or not. Yeah, you're right.
Well, most people don't know that he's there or not there.
Right.
And that's the point. Like, at some point, we've decided free market is going to do this, so guess what? These guys aren't going to play, and there's not a thing we can do about it.
Great stuff, Jeremy. Appreciate it.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. We'll get to our first break of hour number two. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
Back on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive. 20 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. And yes, we'd love to hear from you, your thoughts. I mean, we've been talking about playoffs, bowls, because the bowl schedule released. I guess it made sense that they hadn't released anything yesterday since they were just officially releasing the dates and sites yesterday for the college football playoff, the newly expanded playoff for this year.
Yeah, and I think Jeremy in the last segment hit a lot of what a lot of people are thinking about this whole system.
Well, I mean, it is what it. I mean, it's not going to change as long as ESPN is paying for these rights, and they want more inventory. They want to have something to be showing weeknights there in December.
It's lost a lot of luster. If you think back, if you can remember a pre-BCS system of, you know, every single bowl game having the, there wasn't one championship bowl game that overshadowed the others.
You could see a quote lesser unquote bowl game determining a possible national champion. I mean, bowl games meant more. It was a bigger deal. It's just like anything. When there is less supply, there's more demand. I mean, it meant more to make a bowl game when there were 16 bowl games. Because it was a big deal. I mean, you'd have teams that would win 8 ball games, teams would go 8-3 and not make a bowl. Now, I mean, you don't have anybody that's 500 that doesn't make a bowl game unless the NCAA says you can't play it.
Well, then you expand a postseason to we'll pick the top 2, and then that became 4, and then now we're going to 12, and I'm sure 12's not the final number.
Oh, no, you know it's not.
That we'll end up at, and it's just like to keep the bowl system in place while you expand a college football playoff is, there are some people attached to mid-majors or group of five programs that hate, like Justin, we talked about your relegation idea. I thought 4 or 8 was the right number for the college football playoff. And I also kind of wanted a group of five playoff to also let them determine a national champion separately, because the gap between the group of five and the power five is not necessarily getting smaller.
The gap between the FCS and the group of five is much smaller than the gap between the group of five and the power five.
And I think if you were to take the top 8 group of five programs, you know, if a committee picked the top 8 group of five programs at the end of the season and said, you know, here's, you know, let's match them up, here's a playoff, like
it would just have to be a split off. And maybe we're approaching this when we talk about, you know, the haves and the have nots, who's going to be able to do this whole paying players directly thing and still
who's going to be in the $20 million club and who's not.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Right? Exactly. And if that's the case, then I'm all for it. And if you want to bring some teams from FCS up and, you know, kind of restructure the way college football is, I do think promotion and relegation and all that only happens if football is a completely separate deal. If we are looking at it as, you know, it doesn't affect, like, if you have a bad year and you get knocked off the SEC in football, that doesn't mean you're no longer an SEC team in basketball or all that.
You do it by stadium size. That decides the you know who's in the top level and who's in the mid level and who's you figure it out that way. Or I guess like high schools do attendance, right, to decide you know who's in seven.
Yeah, how big your school is. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Use the stadium to decide who gets to be in the top level or not.
Can I throw out a subject that I know for a fact has never been talked about in the history of the show, and I want to do it now.
Absolutely.
Did you guys see the big sporting event of the day, the upset of the day in international sports? Apparently, the United States of America beat Pakistan in cricket.
Oh, wow.
It is being called the biggest upset in the history of international cricket.
Oh, wow. Now, that's what I'll tell you, the closest thing I came to knowing that is I just noticed that the other bowl game on the very first day is the Cricket Celebration Bowl. So, I mean, I think that's very appropriate. It's
cricket
the
on
cricket
our mind,
celebration.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's exactly what the U.S. should be doing right now.
So, the U.S., along with some nations in the West Indies, are hosting the T20 World Cup, which is a huge... I don't know anything about cricket. Every time I see a score in cricket, I'm like, I don't know how that works. You can't explain this to me.
It's
like 133 and one and 18 overs. I'm like, okay, sure, maybe. I don't know.
I have no idea about the scoring, but it looks like, well, we didn't have quite the equipment to play a game of pickup baseball. So
yeah, exactly. And
we just got some sticks and
apparently the US won.
Paddles.
They beat Pakistan in Dallas today.
Cool.
Very big upset. Apparently, betting odds wise, it was only 8-1, but that's because the betting markets in the knew that the U.S. would have a lot of interest in them. The funniest part about it is it's either Pakistan and India are usually 1 and 2 in cricket. Whoever's world number one at the moment, so you're knocking off one of the biggest powers. Somebody pointed out that Pakistan's got the elites of the elites. These are the top, you know, cricket players in the world on their team. The U.S. None of their guys, most of their guys are not professional cricket players. They have other jobs as well. In fact, one of the top players for the U.S. cricket team, one of the top performers today, is an engineer for Google. That's his day job.
Wow.
And he gets to pull off the upset. Like people are comparing it today to if you look at.
So this isn't the under 20. This isn't the T20. No. This is the they're the 20. There are 20 teams that make up a league.
It's 20 overs. I don't know what that means, but it is a elite level cricket competition. But anyway.
Yeah, it's the 20 countries that make up the World Cup, like the make up the field for the World Cup, and this is the World Cup of. Like the soccer World Cup.
Yeah, exactly.
The cricket World Cup.
And people were talking about it today that if you think of it in terms of historical impact and like the odds being stacked against them, where this team was compared to where they're ranked in the world, they're like it's a bigger upset than the Miracle on Ice. You could make the argument that it's a bigger upset.
I don't doubt that.
Now, I would guess that the United States team is made up heavily of first and second generation Americans from India and Pakistan.
Yeah, like there seemed to be a lot of South Asians, like South Asians
I wonder how many.
That's like years ago the top U.S. soccer players.
Sure, or hockey,
and that's
like,
still that's still the case for sure. I think. I say that. I watched a video of the final, I guess the cricket equivalent of an out. I'm not sure what happened. Pakistan hit the ball and nothing happened, and the U.S. won. I don't know if it was like if you strike out with another foul ball. I couldn't figure out what was going on.
I'd be so nervous about not knowing when to cheer.
Yeah, no.
Watching a cricket game. You're like,
I'm just looking at it.
Just follow the crowd. Pick a team and follow.
I have seen a video of a woman drinking the water. Yeah. My reaction would change 4 or 5 times.
I like the way cricket is played. I think it's a cool looking sport. I don't know anything about it. So I'm going to say this. We were saying a lot of the players on the team look like they were, you know, of, you know, Southeast Asian descent. But the guy that I would say looked like what I would call the first baseman of the cricket team, that dude looked like he was from Texas. Like, it was just his big old
with a guy, beard. Huh?
Yeah, it looked like Kyle Schwarber was playing first base for, you know, the cricket team. It was just really cool though. Like there was some big controversy on Twitter this week about, like, cricket and baseball and people going back and forth about that. Like, people from around the world talking about baseball and cricket and, you know, comparing and contrasting. But to see, like, the U.S., like, beat one of the best teams in the world at a sport that they, like, are relatively new at a high level. I don't know anything about cricket, like I said. I did watch – there were a couple of times when I was in college, there were guys who would play on the intramural field. And I always thought, like, there's a club. I always thought it was fascinating just watching because I'm like Dan was like, I wouldn't know when to cheer. I'm just watching and like, yeah, man, this looks hard. like I'm not sure what y'all are doing, but it looks like you're having fun. So, you know, props to that. But yeah, I wanted to see if this was the first ever segment on the drive where the sport of cricket was mentioned.
First that I have ever discussed in 30 plus years.
Yes. That's a wicked, I'm doing sports a wicked, talk. Wicked doubly and death overs and
yeah, we're coming. Yeah. And don't worry, over the next, you know.
We might have talked about that John Hamm.
It was a super over
is that,
win.
Yeah. Whatever that means. I think it seems like it's like a bonus ball. I don't know.
Is that John Hamm movie?
Like double, like
where,
like
double, where he double dip on it. You know, John Hamm plays a scout. To teach a couple cricketers how to play baseball.
Yeah.
One of those two cricketers in real life became a pro wrestler. And it ended up signed with.
Isn't it based on a true story?
It is a true story. And so there was.
They were both signed by the Pirates.
There was a real Major League Baseball scout who went to India or Pakistan. I forget which one. Two young cricket prospects
and signed under the Pirates.
Thought let's teach them. One of them was throwing 90 plus the first time he ever worked out with a baseball. And so they thought let's sign them.
Yeah, they sling those.
Neither of those athletes, and this inspired the Disney movie Million Dollar Arm, starring John Hamm as the scout. One of those two cricket players came to America. It didn't work out in baseball. He took up pro wrestling and made it all the way to the main roster as one of Jinder's henchmen.
Oh, okay.
He's one of the two.
I was trying to figure out who
Veer,
that was.
Either Veer or Shanky is one of the two.
Yeah,
is one of the two guys from Million Dollar Arm.
That's really cool. Yeah.
You might not ever hear anywhere else.
The only other cricket conversation
you might hear here on the drive. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Still plenty of time for you to join in as we continue with the Thursday drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. The Thursday edition of The Drive. Bill Dan Ferguson in the studio, Auburn Observer.
Me and Bill are practicing wrestling.
Drew with the controls. Ferg, have you told folks about the Observer this hour?
This hour.
Yeah, let them know.
Yeah, all right. So auburnobserver.com, big week. Did a story breaking down Auburn's backcourt, especially in light of – I unplugged my – It's always good when you get in the middle of talking.
We can still hear you.
Yeah, good. It's great. It's always good when you get in the middle of talking and you just can't hear yourself anymore. Anyway, Miles Kelly signing this week. Talked a lot about Auburn's revamped backcourt. Also started a State of the Position series. We're doing a season preview going position by position. This week I did quarterback and wide receiver. Tomorrow, a whole lot of fun if you're an Observer subscriber. We're going to have a mailbag, a lot of good questions there, and talked a lot about home and home scheduling and stuff like that. Got a lot of reader feedback there. And as we talked about in the last hour, I wrote a Auburn football trivia game that Dan is going to be a part of tonight. So him and Auburn internet personality, Pablo, and friend of the program, they're going to go head-to-head with that, and it's going to be a whole lot of fun. So if it works, we might do some more stuff like that here in the future. So auburnobserver.com, sign up. $6 a month or $60 a year. If you sign up tonight, you'll get both of those things that I talked about in the mailbag and the podcast out to you Friday morning. So pretty big week, busy week, and And this just felt like season preview time, you know, Athlon, like Phil Steele, all that starting.
Well,
to come
I mean,
out.
You've got the College World Series, and you know, you've got baseball, softball, track and field are the only college sports that are really going on now, and it's really into the off season. So, I mean, preseason publications are coming out. So, sure.
Dug up some stats this week about Auburn's passing game that I found, even for someone who spends all of his time looking at stats, like even or they're puzzling or not puzzling, just kind of stark for me. Auburn finished last in the SEC in passing yards back-to-back years. They've done that back-to-back years. The previous 13 years, they'd only done that once. And so it's like, ooh.
Well, it's not, but it's not like they've led the SEC in passing yards.
No, yeah.
when was the last time Auburn led the SEC in passing?
My goodness, very 90s, right?
If they did, if they ever did,
yeah. They've only finished in the top half three times, I think, three or four.
Over the last 13 years,
mm-hmm. Wow. I think it was four times in the last 12. Yeah. I think.
I'm not surprised.
The other one that got me. Auburn.
If you told me post 92 there has not been a season where Auburn led the SEC in passing yards, I would think
I could see one of the Bowden teams doing it.
I bet those were Spurrier teams throwing it all over
that's
the field
true.
Too.
That's like, right. That's I mean, right. I mean, Damian had some really good numbers, but
you had Peyton Manning and the Florida quarterbacks throwing
it. And then you had Hal Mumme at Kentucky.
Hal Mumme, Tim Couch. Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, I just don't know, and I wonder if even back in Pat Sullivan's days, I wouldn't be sure that Auburn. I mean, Florida had John Reeves.
Cam didn't lead the conference in passing yards this season.
I wonder how many times Auburn has ever led the league
in
passing.
That up for sure. Also,
it's not many, if any.
Over the last two seasons, there have been 52 different wide receivers in the SEC with 500 yards. Auburn has had zero of them.
Yeah, that is crazy. That's crazy because it's so much more common to over see 1,000-yard receivers now.
Over the last
Auburn
how
hasn't had been
two
able
seasons.
To, over the last
yeah.
two seasons,
there have been 52 different wide receivers. Yeah. Here's another stat from wide receiver land. Auburn has had two 1,000-yard receivers
right
in program history. Did you also know that Auburn has had two 1,000-yard seasons in the NFL from a wide receiver? And here's where the comparison game gets in. LSU had two last season
in college and in the NFL.
Yeah. Hugh Freeze also had two last year in the NFL with DK Metcalf and AJ Brown.
Jordan Jefferson could finish his career with more receiving yards than like Auburn's NFL production combined.
Maybe Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, Justin Jefferson. What I said.
If Jordan Jefferson did it, it'd be interesting.
Well, also LSU. Jordan Jefferson.
He played quarterback.
He switched over.
They're related.
But Justin Jefferson has started. I mean, it's the best start to a career that any receiver has ever had in the NFL.
The highest paid non-quarterback in the NFL, which well deserved.
There was speaking of Auburn.
Although I think he just beat out McCaffrey because McCaffrey got that earlier this week. I think that record lasted for a day for McCaffrey.
The fact about Auburn not having a 500-yard receiver these last two seasons, when Auburn hired Derek Nix, we talked about some of his accomplishments as Ole Miss's receivers coach of late, comparing it to Auburn. There have been, what was the number? It's like six or seven 100-yard games at Ole Miss last year at the receiver position.
By receivers.
Yeah, Ole Miss last year had six or seven 100-yard games at the receiver position, six or seven different times where a receiver had 100 yards. I don't believe Auburn did a single time. Last year, maybe Var got there once.
I think Var got in one of those games, but
just to pick one school in particular, Ole Miss. I mean, it is stark. You know what they've been able to do through the air versus Auburn.
And that's the thing, and that was kind of the tone of the piece this week. I think the two pieces. When you look at the past, it's pretty bleak, and any sort of improvement that can be made this year is, I mean, you know. You could just be decent, and it'd be a pretty big improvement from where you've been in the passing game. The future does look bright when you look at the way Auburn's recruiting.
Yeah, well, Auburn can't have, you know, four or five games where they don't throw for 100 yards again.
That's the thing, though, and we've talked about this.
I mean, we've talked about not only did Auburn not have 100-yard receivers. Remember, Auburn wasn't passing for 100 yards.
Yeah. The thing that sticks out to me the most about this whole situation for Auburn is that, yes, Garrett Nix, Hugh Freeze, even Peyton Thorne, and some of these guys you look at, Keandre Lambert-Smith, Robert Lewis, there's these guys that in the past they have been able to do the things that Auburn needs. Mm-hmm. But it's like, can it come together? Because last year it didn't. And I know not all those people were there last year, but Freeze was, and some of these other guys were, and it wasn't able to kind of click. You got to have it click this year. And I'm not saying expect miracles from this crew. I think if Auburn's more of like a middle-of-the-road team in the SEC throwing the ball, that's a really big improvement.
Oh, yeah.
If you do that, you have more stock in order to keep these guys. Because in the day and age where anybody can just jump into the transfer portal, if I'm an elite receiver and I pop in and it's like, oh, man, I get to Auburn and Auburn's still not throwing the ball well, and I'm not getting targets, and it's like, well, I could go to all these other teams and just automatically be close to a 1,000-yard receiver. It's going to be tough for Auburn to keep them around. So, again, I don't think they need to become LSU overnight, but they need to start heading that direction, because the big picture is, if you look at Freeze's background, Derek Nix's background, and you see Cam Coleman, Perry Thompson, Bryce Kane, Malcolm Simmons, you're in the lead for a guy like Caleb Cunningham. You got two more four-star receivers visiting this weekend. If you start building that up, and oh, by the way, who's next? Who's the next quarterback in line? Could it be Walker White, who's a top five quarterback in his class? Could it be a Juju Lewis, who's the number one, number two quarterback in his class? You know, you start doing that, and you see
– now you need to see results.
This is such – and it's not the sexiest thing in the world to, like, pump everybody up for the season. Like, hey, Auburn football, bridge year. Like, but that's an optimistic way to look at it this year for Auburn. It's like – they haven't arrived, and unless they catch crazy fire this year, if this is a team that is solidly winning record, showing improvement on offense, you're building that bridge to the future, and that's what you need. You can't like that's the thing, is like, when you've struggled the way that you've had, I know no one's going to get super fired up and be like, man, hey, a good year for Auburn is if they go 8-4 and they're seventh, eighth, ninth in the SEC and throwing the ball, everyone's going, oh, that doesn't sound great. But it's like, no, it is miles better than what you've had over these last few years. And you could see, you know, it all builds on itself. And when you start getting more and more talent at the position, like, no disrespect to the guys who have done this at quarterback for Auburn. I mean, obviously Bo Nix was super talented. But wide receivers especially – like, no disrespect to those guys that came before, but you are building a spot where it's like blue chip, blue chip, blue chip, blue chip in your passing game. You haven't had that consistently over your history. You're trying to do something that you haven't done before, but you got to build that bridge, because the only way you can get from nothing to a lot and keep them there is if you show progress. You can't just be like, well, we're going to sign all these guys and then it's going to work out. It's like, those guys have no, like, nothing's keeping them here if they don't feel like they're going in the right direction.
No, you're right. That brings up something that I wanted to get to, and this is a great way to sort of lead into it. Had a really fun conversation with someone that said, look, I don't care if Auburn doesn't win but six or seven games this year. If they can throw the ball, I'll be excited. And I wondered about that. I wondered how, you know, Dan, we've talked about Auburn needs to get, and we need to see that significant step forward. I've talked to more than one person that said, I don't care if we're not going to win them all, then I'll be happy with a 7-5 season if we can throw for 3,000 yards and 30 touchdowns. And we've got a couple of 1,000-yard receivers.
Can I? Yeah.
I wonder how people would feel about that.
I mean, 7-5 would still be progress from what you did last year, but not, you're right.
If you're out there playing like, you know, and I don't think the defense is going to be terrible, but this one particular person said, I don't care. I'm sick and tired of no offense. I'd be happy to be losing games 35-31 or winning games 42-38 as long as we've got a great offense.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things where, yeah, you would say that, you know, and
would that be? I mean,
a decade ago, it was like, man, I wish we could play defense
again.
Like, yeah. So it's just, what have you done recently? You know, that's the thing. I'll give you an example, and it's not quite a great parallel, but like, yeah, when I hear, can we throw for this many yards and this many touchdowns or something like that, and I'm like, so what you're saying is, if you could have a Chris Todd year, if you have an O-9 Chris Todd year and that be your offense, you know, hey, we took a big step forward on offense. Still, 7-8 win football team, but, you know, we made progress. We look better. Like, that's probably where – that's on the optimistic side of what you could see Auburn's expectations here, because if you look at their talent level and you look at what they've brought – I haven't seen the blue chip ratio yet this year, but, like, Auburn is probably 7th, 8th. Ninth, you know, maybe six, maybe
somewhere
on the high
in
side.
The middle. Somewhere in the
middle in terms of just pure talent.
Yeah.
Okay. They have not been a team that has been overachieving recently. In fact, they've underachieved. No. So if you get that, you're just like, hey, in the middle of the road, and no one's gonna get like in June, no one's gonna get fired up about that. But like, man, I see if Auburn can throw the ball better this year and be and win 7 or 8 games, like you will take that. That is progress. That is real progress. And I think against the schedule Auburn's got this year, it's possible. And one of the other things I pointed out in the quarterback story today, or this week, is that if you look at Peyton Thorne, and it's like, okay, Auburn decided that for the good of the program, we're not going to go get another transfer quarterback. We're not going to spend all that money. We're gonna use that to invest in a better team around the quarterback. We've got a quarterback for one more year. Let's just get the receivers better. We'll change the offensive staff. We'll get another left tackle. We'll get things going.
Mm-hmm.
And what do they get coming into the year? What's the knock on Peyton Thorne? Even in his good year at Michigan State, against the best of the best, he hasn't been a great quarterback. He's, you know, his numbers aren't great yet. Well, what do you have? If you have all these new pieces, what's better than having 5 straight home games to start the year, including 4 where you should be solid favorites?
Point of order, by the way. Peyton Thorne was better against Alabama, Georgia, and Ole Miss than he was against New Mexico State and
incorrect.
Maryland.
No,
and Cal-
incorrect. Maryland, yes, but not New Mexico State. He had like 3 touchdowns. Against, I mean, he was like 16 of 19 against.
Is Cal and A&M I could lump in there? Like I'd say, like I don't know if Peyton. I mean, Peyton Thorne against the best teams last year. Like I mean, it wasn't like he lit it up, but I mean, you think about Auburn was able to stay in.
I think
games.
If you include his running.
Sure,
yes.
Sure. Like I thought, like Peyton Thorne's football in those games. Like I don't know if like I guess LSU would come to mind, but I don't know if Peyton Thorne's worst games last year came against Auburn's best competition.
Dan, I hate to burst your bubble, but Peyton Thorne's line against Alabama last year was 5 of 16 for 91 yards and 2 picks.
And so I'm thinking more because Auburn was in the game late.
Sure.
I guess that's part of it too. Is that
New Mexico State? He didn't have 3 touchdowns, but that was the week before against Arkansas. He was 15 of 19.
Really struggled until the last couple drives against Cal in that game.
His good games last year were non-conference games, except for Cal, and then that stretch where it was Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, Arkansas. Those were good games, comparatively speaking.
I think he needs Auburn needs for him to be able to throw the ball more and them to have confidence in him throwing the ball more. I think that's going to help the whole offense, the running game, and everything. I mean,
yeah,
I think last year, you're hesitant to throw the ball more last year.
More than half of Auburn's games last season, they threw less than 20 passes.
I know.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, but you cannot do that.
Part of that is because you're hesitant to call them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's not
who's
all
gonna catch him. Who's going to
yeah,
catch him?
That's exactly
yeah.
right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess, and that would come to mind too in the example of the Iron Bowl. I mean, what 4 or 5 drops was sort of the story coming out of that.
Yep.
You know, even when Auburn had gone to the pass, and
oh,
even when
goodness.
Peyton Thorne had thrown
oh,
it,
my. Yeah.
There are a couple.
Yeah. All right, let's get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
Reynolds after Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Final segment of the Thursday Drive. Been a fun one here today with Justin Ferguson. Always is. Oh, Ferg, by the way, when was your last Braves game? Man, they are not. That's not your fault. I'm not blaming it all on you, but it is not fun times right now for the Braves.
I went to the only loss of the A series. I went to the only loss in a month, and I went to the only start in a month and a half where Chris Sale wasn't the best pitcher in baseball. Now, however, I did go to the game where the Braves hit the ball, and they came back in that one, and then the bullpen kind of let them down a little bit. D defense wasn't great. You miss Ronnie out there in right field. I love you, Adam Duvall, but you're not really great.
Yeah. What's Justin Ferguson's trade deadline fantasy for the Braves? What do you want?
So I haven't given it up entirely. Like, I want to see the Phillies play.
Third best team in the National League. Don't give it up.
No, that's what I'm saying. In terms of the division race. Like, I don't want to give it up. They're 8 games back. I want to see the Phillies play some good teams at some point, but they're just good regardless. Like, they're just pitching. I've mentioned this a few times.
Their starting pitching has just been great.
And they're just getting more offense because I think the Braves at their best have a really good pitching staff right now. Freed's been awesome. Sale, except for that one start, was good. Reynaldo Lopez has been a revelation this year. Charlie Morton's up and down, but when Charlie's good, he's good. He's been really good. Like, I feel okay. Bullpen's been solid. You know, I know people like to crack on Raisel Iglesias, but like, he's been really good for the Braves this year. Is this the offense has been? The vibes are just off.
The offense has really been off.
It's really.
I mean, even when Acuna was out there, he wasn't anywhere near.
I don't know if they're still at this point, but there was a stretch in May where they led baseball in hard hit rate and barrels and were dead last in runs. And I'm like, okay. At some point, you're going to get some regression. You're going to get some, you know, positive regression.
Undertaker's here.
Yeah, I love that.
I want to see who's available at the deadline because the dream is Trout gets to go to a contender if he comes back healthy enough. He's hurt. He's got to come.
They're
back.
Not trading Trout.
I mean, there's
he doesn't want to be traded though.
He doesn't want to. Tyler Anderson, former.
So here's the problem with the Trout trade. He can't stay healthy, and he's got an absolutely massive contract.
Yes.
The one to watch, and it's not a huge contract, the one to watch is Luis Robert.
Yeah, well, the White Sox have said, come get him.
The Cardinals.
And I think it was a Garrett Crochet on the block.
The Cardinals are back in it. I was thinking Goldschmidt not all that long ago could be a trade deadline prize.
Most of the National League's in it.
Yeah, most of the National League's in it.
I think my expectation right now for the Braves is that they can make some moves. They can maybe put some pressure on Philly. I think your best case scenario this year for this team, they'll probably be a wild card and they'll be hitting the ball better.
All right. One more time.
AuburnObserver.com. Check it out. Mailbag and trivia tomorrow. Check it out.
All right. That's going to do it for the Thursday drive. Don Dunn in tomorrow. I'll be checking out the Stones in Atlanta tomorrow.
Have fun, Bill.
So have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.